Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so a bit of a special episode for you today, and a welcome return to our JREP panel members. You haven't seen them for a while. We got together with a very cool young man by the name of Garth, who asked to come on the panel and hit us all up with some questions. So he used to live in Japan, married a Japanese woman, and now wants to come back here to live somewhere around Tokyo for a start. And he's also hoping to get into real estate here in Japan. So the conversation went from very high-level financial life planning lines of conversation down to more practical medium tracks, such as how to work in the real estate sector here in Japan, what does the work entail, the level of certifications and Japanese language required, how to stand out from the competition, build good business relationships, and so forth. And then down to nitty-gritty details related to property investment and home purchases. So everything from loans, how to apply for them, how to qualify for them, how much to borrow and when, as well as a very detailed conversation on budgets, yields, locations, property and tenant profiles, leasehold versus freehold, real yield versus projected yield, long-term versus short-term rentals, all of the stuff that we always discuss here on the podcast. And then back to higher level business and relationship stuff again, such as just doing the work that you love, owning your professional niche, learning to keep an open mind, but also learning when to say no to things and how to make sure your money is always working for you. So really good conversation, a bit longer than usual, but well worth it in my opinion. Enjoy the episode and I'll see you again on the other side.
Ready? There we go.
Okay. The Japan Real Estate Experts panel back in session. We've got a special guest with us today. But we'll do a short round of intro for the three of us, maybe the four of us if Emil joins us, and then we'll get into a lengthy intro for you, Garth. So Tracy, kick it off.
Sure, thanks, Ziv. I am the short-term rental or minpaku expert. So I've been doing minpaku in Tokyo for 10 years. I've been through all the regulations. I'm a minpaku kandi, which means I have a property management license. I also am licensed for all the different houses that we rent. I do short and medium term furnished rentals. So vacations, relocations, and people on a work trip, like contracts, for example. So yeah, family stays. So that's what I do.
Short-term stay queen, Blanca.
Hi, everybody. I'm Blanca Kobayashi, and I'm the co-founder and marketing director of ARC Reform. We are a bilingual reform company in Tokyo and in Matsudo. We go basically all over Kanto area, and we can do your reform and assist you with both your personal or your commercial properties in English or in Japanese or in some few other languages if need be. And, you know, help you navigate through that because it can get really stressful. So we are here for you.
Thank you. And I'm Ziv Nakajima again. And for the past 11 years, my partner and I have been running Nippon Trading's International, NTI for short. And we help people buy, sell, and manage properties anywhere in Japan, whether they reside in Japan or overseas. And Garth, who the hell are you, man?
Yes, right. Good morning from Washington, D.C. It's currently like 11:41 at midnight. So looking forward.
Wow, thank you for making it. Wow.
Oh, no problem.
You just made it earlier if I knew it was that late. I wasn't even looking.
Oh, no, it's okay. This is great. I love it. It's so cool meeting like your heroes, and this is exactly what this is. I watch your every episode that you all put out. So I was originally born and raised in Washington, D.C. I lived back in Japan from about 2010 to 2013, and then again from 2018 to about early 2022. I lived in Yokosuka area through the military, as well as Sasebo. And my wife, she's from Hiroshima. So we love Japan. We're going to move back there in about 8 years. I moved there permanently, and I have a whole plan listed out with questions for each of you, and looking forward to doing this. So thank you so much for setting this up.
That's fantastic. And
thank you so much.
Getting a bit red around the cheeks there, but thank you for thank you for watching. I think we're awesome. Glad that you're finding value in it.
People with 5-year plans, like, really amaze me. I've been speaking to a couple of people as well recently that have, like, you know, we're going to be doing this in, you know, 2025, and I'm like going, oh my goodness, I don't even know what I'm going to do next week sometimes. So all you've organized people really, really impress me. So
the stuff that you think you can control, right? Like, if they're anything like me, I don't know where I'm going to be in the world or what time I'm going to be waking up or what, you know, my house is going to look like, but I'm hoping to know how much money I'm going to have saved by then.
Right. Yeah. It's all prediction. Almost like a milkmaid.
That, yeah. I know. Yes. So
hello. Hey guys.
Emil.
Yeah, so shoot, man.
Apologies for that.
Oh, Emil, is he with us? Oh, he is.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm here. Sorry, yeah. Technical glitches, my app was crashing, so I just had to reload. But anyway, I'm back, ready to go. Hey God, how are you doing, my friend?
Good, doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. Very good to see you again.
Yeah, very good seeing you as well. Very good. And we just
did
the intro.
You're the one running late, Emil, because you already know Garth, right? You had a chat.
Yeah, we did. We did maybe a month ago or so.
Yeah.
Oh, Emil, do your intro.
Oh, okay. So my name's Emil. I'm a real estate agent based here in Tokyo. So I help families find their home in Tokyo. We arrange the financing and do everything from start to finish. So we'll search for find what you want to buy, your requirements, search for a house for you, take you to all the viewings, and then make an offer, do all the negotiation, all the bank financing until you get the keys. So that's what we do. So if you have any, and we do it all in English. So anyone who's interested in buying a house in Tokyo, their family home using Japanese bank financing, please send me an email, sales@realestate.jp. That's our new email address. So please reach out. Thank you.
And realestate.jp is also the sponsor for the inaugural February first ever Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo. So thank you for the sponsorship as well. So Garth, you gave us a bit of a background on who you are and what you do, and then now we've got everyone here. So shoot, ask us anything.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, the first question is my goal after the Navy, and I'm getting out of the Navy probably in about 8 years from now, and I'm super serious about this. I'm going to move to Japan. Initially, we'll probably settle in Yokohama first, the Minato Mirai area, just to get the lay of the land and figure things out. My question is, knowing what you all know now, what would be the steps to become like an effective real estate agent to work in Tokyo? So right now I'm studying for the JLPT, but is there anything that I could do besides that in preparation to work in Tokyo specifically?
Well, there's only one licensed real estate agent here, so we'll let him
take
that one.
That's
going to
be
a real. Yeah, so... it's a bit of a challenging question because there's so much you can do, but there's also so much that you only really learn once you get into it. Okay. Realistically, though, so how the system works in Japan is the agency is licensed and they have a licensed agent like that prepares all the contracts. So in Japan, the agent's license is not like the US or Australia, where you can kind of get it in 1 week's worth of, you know, study, a short, simple, you know, exam at the end, and congratulations, you're a broker. In Japan, being a licensed agent is like 6 to 18 months worth of serious study, and it's a 15% pass rate. Okay, so only 15% of applicants like people that take the test actually pass. And the test is held once a year.
Okay.
It's a bit more like what you would think a attorney or a real estate attorney or real estate lawyer would be doing. Okay, so the agent in Japan will actually prepare all the documentation, prepare all the contracts. They go to City Hall and check all the zoning, the current codes, any plan changes, any developments expected in the area and what have you. So there's quite a lot that it covers, and it's quite an intense certification.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's not something that, and in general, the agency needs to have it. They need to hire one person within the agency to have it. The individual staff members do not need to acquire that license. Unlike in Australia and the US, where pretty much to do the sales sort of function or to introduce clients, you need to have a broker's license. That's they don't require that. In Japan, the system is quite different, okay, because it's quite complex to get. So rather the as long as there's one licensed staff to do that paperwork, the actual sales people don't need to do it. So you don't need to focus on trying to get that certification, okay? You can basically put that aside and think you don't need to worry about that.
Plus, just to add, the JLPT in itself is probably not going to be enough to wrap your head around the Japanese that's entailed in this, in the literature studying for the test and in this test itself.
Right. Yeah. That's probably just a starting point. I figure it's probably going to get punched in the face once I actually get to Tokyo and then get to do the process initially. So that's
what No. I mean, specifically that, because JLPT prepares you for daily life to work in a company for. This is heavy legalese, jargon heavy, gotcha, real estate stuff that, you know, regardless of your level of native Japanese, until you've actually studied in the language, you know, you're just not going to have an idea what they're talking about.
Makes sense. Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. But also, in regards to what Ziv said, it's actually not. Like, don't let that be overly daunting. You don't need to know every kind of legalese or every kind of specific word, because once you do it several times, it's the same thing all the time, right? Mm-hmm. These legalese, it's very finite, just in the real estate world, and it's always the same thing and always the same meaning.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't read any kanji, but the five or six that I always see, I can identify.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, like you can... I can sort of teach you what's on the PDF flyer. Like you've probably seen those for sale flyers. It's a one-page PDF, and it explains all the details of the property, the size, the zoning, the regulations, like the building regulations within it, when it was built. So much information about the property, the sizing, etc. That's in Japanese. And to be honest, that's a good chunk of the Japanese you need to know. So someone who's just done JLPT, like, you know, level one or level two, and you give them that flyer, they'll be like, this is a bit complex. It's just all of a sudden, it's like the JLPT is like, you know, you're reading articles and what have you.
Right.
Looking at real estate documents, a bit different. But if I take someone...
Once you've looked at a few of them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If I take someone who's only got level three or four and say, this is what... this means, this is what that means, boom, boom, boom. I can give you dozens of those documents and it's all exactly the same.
Yeah.
So it's actually quite easy, I think, to get to understand the documentation. But what you need to be good at, rather, is not there to function, because realistically, most of your clients will be foreign clients. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're not going to send you to work with native Japanese. There's no reason to, right? You're not just working with foreign clients, like similar to what I do. So you need to be good at speaking English, which you are. The Japanese you need to know, a lot of what you'll do is actually searching on the database, understanding the client's needs, and then finding the property on. And RAINS is equivalent to MLS, the multi-listing services that you guys have in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a database with properties in different areas.
Okay.
So I think a big part of being a good agent is actually being able to find properties that match the client's needs. Mm-hmm. And so having a good skill set in navigating reins, which again is a very, it's very fixed language, right? So it just, you know, the size, you're looking for the location, etc. That's a big one. But really the important thing is understanding the area and the location. And I think that goes the same with a lot of agents in a lot, like all over the world, is you need to know your area. You need to be familiar with the area, you know, your particular suburb. So I know Tokyo very, very well. And even then, more so the west part of Tokyo, pretty much from like, you know, Minato-ku, Chiyoda-ku, and then further west.
Right.
Like, I guess further east it becomes like Chiba anyway, but yeah, I don't really do that far. Maybe Blank is a bit more familiar with that side of town. But pretty much like the west part of Tokyo up to Tamagawa River and then across to Yokohama a little bit. I've done some clients on the other side of the Tamagawa River. But like those areas, those train lines, okay, almost every stop, I know in the order of where all the stops are and all the trains.
That's his turf, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's only, you don't have to memorize them early on, but you need to be able to actually, like, I guess, kind of know, okay, these are the train lines and where they go from on the Yamanote line. Out to where.
Okay.
And that way, when a client says, look, I need to be 30 minutes into Shibuya without transfer, you know, okay, these are the train lines popping out of Shibuya, right? This is kind of where they go. And then be able to tell, okay, well, so let's look from this, from Shibuya on the Nakashira line up to, you know, Meiraimai. Let's look on if you want to go in town, Ginza line goes in, or Dingintoshi line goes out to Tamagawa, Toyoko line to Yokohama.
I guess also, Garth, before you go down the Tokyo rabbit hole too much, Emil, Garth, do you know roughly what kind of real estate job you want to do? Like, do you want to be a Tokyo agent dealing with, like Emil does, like, for example, with foreign families, or do you have a specific, or you just want to get, you know, whatever kind of work experience that you can get first?
Yeah, thank you. So initially I will just jump in and I'll take whoever at this point. And then I think once, just going back to what Emil said, I'll probably transition to like foreigner families and specialize into that while still, maintaining my Japanese proficiency and stuff. So whatever gets me through the door initially, I think I'll just probably end up sticking with. So if that makes any sense.
But in and around Tokyo, like you're planning to stay in that area, because you said you'll initially be living there, but we haven't heard if you have any other plans down the track. Because you said Hiroshima is where your wife is from, right?
Right. Yeah. So, initially, I want to live in Yokohama to kind of like get the lay of the land and like kind of train myself to get towards Tokyo. And then what I'd like to do is buy like an investment property when I first get to Yokohama in Otaku. Because just researching Otaku, which is it's a little bit above north of Kawasaki, it seems like the one bedroom apartments there are really, really affordable in terms of my budget or how much I want to spend. Because I want to spend, like, initially I want to have about $400,000 US dedicated to this. And I want to buy a one bedroom apartment every 4 years and kind of try to leapfrog that investment money. But that's just hearsay. So what do you guys think about that? Do you think Otaku is a good area, or a southern part of Tokyo is a good area?
Tokyoites? basically, everybody except me, basically.
Yeah.
Go ahead, yeah.
I was going to say Tokyo, it's really hard because Tokyo is not really one big city. It's just a collection of villages, and you're not really going to know how you feel about something just by looking at a map. You've got to live it. You've got to sort of be in be in the area to see whether or not that the commute is good for you or,
He's talking about an investment property, though, Tracy. He's talking about the play. Is it a good place to invest in, right, Carl?
Yes.
Oh, invest in for short-term rentals?
I'm actually thinking about 4 years, keeping it for about at least 4 years. Maybe like a one-bedroom.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Investment, you want to buy a place for you to live in and then...
What
do you mean by investment property?
Oh, to rent it out to people. So buy
long-term rental, right?
Long-term rental or short-term rental?
Long-term rental, yes.
Okay, so what did you mean by the 4 years?
Oh, so I was going to buy that one bedroom apartment and then rent it out to tenants and then just main, like learn the ins and outs, like pretty much use that as a guinea pig. And I just want to work my way up to probably either Meguro, Tokyo, Nakameguro, or Kotoku, like somewhere within that area to buy another apartment. But I initially would start off in Otaku because it just seems affordable.
So the 4 years was to buy the next property. You didn't mean in 4 years you're going to do something else and kick the tenant out. You mean?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So 4 years to buy. So you're planning to basically set up an investment properties, long-term residential investment properties portfolio in and around the Tokyo area that you'll expand over time. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And then you're asking if Otaku is a good potential tenant, long-term residential tenant investment area to get started on.
Yes. Definitely. Okay.
So what's Otaku like for tenants, folks?
Yeah, it's a pretty generic question. Maybe a better question would be like, is there any good initial area within Tokyo that you all have seen that's like, oh, it's pretty good market for this low vacancy here. Tenants are pretty reasonable, stuff like that.
There's a lot of vacancy everywhere. There's no housing crisis here. There's a lot of vacancy everywhere. So I would say it depends on who you want to rent to. So yeah. If you're doing long-term rental, like are you wanting to rent to students, then you would obviously want to be close to a uni and a uni that takes in foreign students, for example. Or are you wanting to, you know, if you're wanting to rent to, you know, to expats, so for like someone coming in for 2 years or paying a, you know, the corporate rates, then you want to kind of be around about the Minato-ku area. That's where, you know, that's where expats tend to live. It's really, again, it depends on who you want to rent to.
Okay. He's talking about a single bedder. I guess budget-wise, that's why you're mentioning that you're looking at studios single bed.
And you said $100,000, right?
For that initial investment, yes.
Yeah, so that's what, 15, 14, 14 million yen.
At the moment, yeah.
At the moment, yeah.
Plus, minus. You definitely have to go outskirts of Tokyo.
You can't be done. You know, and even look. You know, don't be afraid of looking. You know, Chiba or Kawasaki or even
Saitama City like, or Yokohama Central.
Yeah, Yokohama Central. Like anything close to the Yamanote Line is just. I think it's going to be. You're not going to get anything for that 14 million. So.
Emil will know better how the prices for those units are, but I think if I had 14 million yen to buy a property, buy an apartment, I would probably we live in Matsudo, and I know that if I bought something in Matsudo for 14 million, I can actually get a decent unit.
Oh wow, okay.
You buy in Matsudo, 35 minutes. You are 30 minutes to Tokyo Station on the quick line. You are 40 minutes to Shinagawa Immigration. I mean, it's like the connection over there is good. So I would not really focus at that point, probably in Tokyo. But even if you are, then just make sure that you are getting something decent, because 14 million is not going to probably get you the best unit in Tokyo, and you will have to invest in renovations. You will have to hire me.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
I don't know if he can afford you with that budget, Blanca.
Yeah, I don't know.
No one could afford Blanca.
But seriously, a commuter town, like, I mean, I would say Matsudo is almost like a commuter town. Yeah. You know, Akebane in Saitama. You know, those things, people like Narimas in Saitama, like people commute in and you get a lot more for your money in those places.
Tokyo, like, you know, when you have all the ku, then you are looking more at those edging ku in Tokyo, where you can get slightly better price. But then when you look at the edging ku of Tokyo and then the neighboring city for different prefecture, either whether it is Saitama or it is Chiba, you will get the price far better.
Okay. And the return, I can tell you from an investment perspective, we've got maybe, let's say about a quarter of our customers' portfolios are people who wanted to be in and around Tokyo. And a couple of them ended up finding something attractive in very suburban areas of Tokyo. But most of them ended up buying in those cities that everyone's just mentioned. So Yokohama, Kawasaki, Saitama, Chiba, and all of the little satellite towns.
I didn't know that. Okay.
And the other thing, but you have to also be aware that, you know, if you're buying a unit like a condo, you're going to have, you know, certain ongoing fees, kandihi, like you'd have those fees. And also be aware when you buy something, whether you've got land rights or not.
Yeah, the land rights. That's right. Okay.
Because if they're, you know, if you're you buy into a place because, you know, for 14, you're gonna get a slightly older place. If you won't really have much of a say on the
management of the building,
on the management. And so if they just, and if you don't have land rights, as soon as they decide to pull it down, that's it. Your money's done. So if you
there could be good deals for cash flow if you buy something that's not outright ownership, but they are a bit more tricky. They are a bit trickier to sell down the track value wise and sell wise, right, Emil?
Yeah, I think we need to take it a step back. We're going into like very specifics of a investment and what's good, what's not. And I think we've mentioned the key points you need to look for, right? When in terms of investment property are, you know, access to downtown. Mm-hmm. So proximity to a station, being close to a station. Yeah. And depending on the type of properties, be it, you know, you're looking at one room places. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be expats, high net worth individuals. It's going to be quite cheap, maybe more students or people. All right. Or first year employees or new employees, maybe rent might be 50 to 80,000 yen a month. Right.
Okay.
Is kind of the clientele you're looking at. So you can get a property anywhere. Okay. But what you need to consider more is, okay, how much yield do you want? So in general, and I think, you know, Ziv will agree with me on this as well. then you are fancier, more attractive the building is and more attractive the location is, the lower the rental yield. Okay. The older, further away, less attractive it is, the higher the rental yield. So if you go to like the country, like, you know, far away in Hokkaido, the countryside of Hokkaido, an old rundown wooden building, you can get what on paper says a 20% annual rental yield. But it's the vacancy is going to be high, maintenance is going to be a nightmare. The kind of tenants that are paying 25,000 yen, 30,000 yen a month are not very stable individuals in terms of employment or in every other aspect of their life. But hey, you take on the risk because it's a high yield. But it's that's an extreme
really,
example.
It's not really, though.
Sorry?
That's not practical yield, aside from maybe the 2-3 months after purchase, and that's it.
Because there's not going to be full tenancies and whatnot. That's on paper, it looks like that. But let's take a more realistic scenario and just one train line from, like, be it, you know, say Shibuya, right? Or Ebis is a good example, right? Ebis, or further out towards like Tamagawa, right? For out on the train line towards, you know, maybe Yokohama, for example. Like, if you have the same property getting 200,000 yen a month rent, I'll do that, like 100,000 yen a month rent. Both properties are going to be priced at, say, if the price is the same, 30 million yen, 30 million yen to purchase. Well, as a buyer, you'd say, hold on, I can get the same. This rent is both 100,000 yen a month. The cost is the same. I'd rather one in Ebis, not down in Yokohama, because what Ebis is, Ebis is the Yamanote line. It's more attractive. You know what? Even if there's a competition to bid up the price, I'm willing to pay 33 million, 34, 35 million, even though the rent is the same because it's Ebis, right? Or because the building is brand new. The renters don't care. Right, like if it's at the same rent, right? So that's why the more attractive it is, the market, the buyers are willing to pay more for more attractiveness of the building, which means the yield goes down, right? It's just the market dynamic. You can't expect that the identical property getting the same rent, or a similar property, similar age, will get the same rent, and the buyers will be comfortable paying the same purchase price. No, they're willing to pay. So that adjusts the yield, which is why the more attractive it is, the newer it is, the same goes with age. The more they're willing, a buyer is willing to increase how much they're willing to pay. So in general, the more attractive the property is, location, age, and like, you know, proximity to station, etc., then it'll get a lower yield because owners are willing to pay a premium for the extra quality of the building and low maintenance headache. So that's kind of what you need to take. So everyone mentioned earlier great locations, but each of those, like, okay, yeah, you can get a high rental, like anywhere in Tokyo, I think it will be good. What you need to find is, okay, how much rental yield do you want to get back from this? And what are you considering in terms of the age of the building? Must it be new? No, you know, I'm all right with a 20-year-old building, maybe.
14 million yen isn't going to get anything new, though.
Yeah, exactly, right.
But, yeah, maybe you want to, you're okay with a 20-year-old building, nothing older, okay? And it's all right to be away, but maybe you can't get anything less than a 3.5% rental yield. Maybe it must be more than 3.5. Well, then you can't be close to Tokyo, you're going to be a little bit further away. So there's a bunch of dynamics, and that's each person's sort of inherent, you know, that becomes a bit emotional and based on your situation. It's like, well, you know, I just want a newer building, right? I don't want it to be over a certain age, or I'm not willing to accept it. And that's your personal preference. That's why there's no one property that matches everyone's sort of needs.
It's also, we get a lot of customers who factor the decision based on not even the percentage yield, but how much cash in pocket they want to get at the end of every month, right? So that will also dictate what kind of property they get.
Okay. So in your experience, with that being said, what have been these sort of opportunities within the Tokyo area? And I'm pretty much talking to everybody except Ziv at the moment. Sorry. That yield the greatest cash back return? Is that the areas around the Yamanote line? And is that like Shinjuku,
Not the best cash return. No, that's the other way around.
So the less attractive. Yeah. So the further away it is. Wow,
that's so fascinating.
So it's going to be maybe 20 minutes from a station far away. Go to Hachioji. But even not Hachioji station, because that's like a pretty big one, but like one of the other minor non-express stop stations. Inconvenient walk from it, low sunlight, like something really unattractive. But the problem is the numbers look okay, but it's harder to rent out. It's harder to sell. Yes. So you can get a 7%, even that's a bit hard, but say 7% yield, but there's got to be lots of unattractive aspects about it that it seems to be sold so low, right? Because if it were in Shibuya, a nice building that's getting 7% yield, that will get sold right away in a fraction of a second. Even a 5% yield will get sold right away.
There's a balance to be struck there. There's a balance that you need to reach. That's why I was mentioning, and Tracy and Blanca too were talking about the other cities that are around Tokyo, where they are still attractive enough for tenants to give you stable occupancy, but the return are going to be slightly higher than you'd get in Tokyo.
Yeah.
Sense. Okay.
And that's why it's your personal requirement. Go ahead, Tracy.
I was just going to say, I had a question why the four-year plan. I just also wanted to, you know, to make sure that you realize that you can't leverage it, like if you can't really leverage equity, right, if you're in a property. So you were looking at what just using 4 years, you reckon that 4 years of cash flow would mean that you'd have enough then to buy an additional place.
That was the assumption. It kind of went back to what you mentioned regarding the fees and learning everything about dealing with the guinea pig first investment. And to use that 4 years to truly understand, like, all right, what mistakes did I make here? How much did I actually make? And is there a better way to do this? So that was just like a grace period of just trying to learn the ins and outs of.
The 4 years will definitely not give you enough money to buy another property.
And experience-wise, you'll probably have a bit of it already after a year or two, I would say. You don't need to wait 4 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You cannot count on the fact, because I know that... I know in US or abroad, a lot of people would buy a property, they fix it up, they rent it out, they're collecting the rent, and then they use it to leverage to get more loan or get a loan and stuff.
Burr method. Burr method.
Yeah, but
doesn't work here.
Japan is a little bit different beast, so you cannot... You cannot apply, I think, the American system here and think it's going to work.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
And by that, not it doesn't work because it, like, it's a cultural difference. Like the banks don't give you financing. You can't borrow the equity out of your existing property to buy another property. So you kind of asked two questions in one, and one. I think we've answered about what just straight up investment strategy for a rental apartment being in Tokyo. And I think it's similar dynamics for other cities everywhere, right? If you're in central, Fukuoka, down there, then it's going to, versus further out from the city, it's going to be a similar dynamic.
Okay.
However, that's the investment side of stuff. But I think, to be honest, in your case, you say you want to try it as a bit of a test guinea pig to do it, like, I don't think that's a necessary approach. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden you're putting in a few hundred grand to test something when I don't feel the experience you get would justify the cost of buying a property just as a guinea pig. I think you're better off, like, what the better situation I feel is, okay, when you live here, you will, within a few years, be eligible for a loan financing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So did you say is your wife Japanese?
Yeah. She's from Hiroshima.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have a Japanese wife. So within a year, you'll be eligible for financing. Okay. So this, and you can borrow maybe like 7 times your annual income. Okay. Whatever that means. So let's work on that. Be it 5 million yen, you can borrow a 35 million property. If your income is 10 million yen, you can borrow a 70 million yen property. So, and the bank will give you like pretty much 100% financing, but you might need some closing costs. You might need some extra cash. So that $100,000 is better off going, I feel, towards getting a 70 million, a 40 million yen or a 70 million yen property, okay, and using that cash to do the closing costs. Now, all of a sudden, you've got, with the same 100 grand that you
would have really been, need this much for the closing costs, though? I mean, the loans in Japan are about 100.
Not at all. He won't, but I'm just saying, like, in terms of cash, use of cash.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't feel buying a property in cash is the best option when in a year or so you will have leverage accessible to you.
Okay. Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
So you can still buy a 100,000, a 10 million yen property, a 20 million, like a $100,000 property, but you won't need to put your full cash into it. You'll be able to leverage financing because you're a resident here and you're employed in an income here.
Okay.
So that would be the first thing I would say. So yeah, you can still purchase an investment property, mm-hmm, but I think rather than doing it, you know, early on as a test run, and doing it as a full cash purchase, wait till you get here and then you can do it as a leverage purchase. I think you'll get your money will go up.
How are you planning to live here for the first couple of years, Garth? Are you going to be renting? Do you have? Does your wife have a property there that you'll be living in? What's the plan for residential for you guys?
Yeah, I think initially when we come here, we're going to be just renting out in Yokohama, and that's actually a really good question because we would like to buy our, or for lack of better terms, retirement home, either in Tokyo. We want like a 3-bedroom, like high rise, if possible. Like this is like way down the line. Like I would say, like
about. Well, no, 20. But I mean that's what Emil was saying. If you're going to be renting, which means basically throwing money away every month, mm-hmm, the wisest use of your time and money would be to make sure that you can get a home loan as soon as possible because the interest rates, okay, are close to zero in Japan, and wow, then use, oh, that cash of your, or at least, you know, maybe a small part of that cash of yours used towards closing costs on that property, okay, so that you stop, okay, spending money on rent and then start saving towards the investment property and then potentially maybe getting an investment loan down the track as well. But not to go for the home loan would be silly if you're going to be renting.
Really? Okay. I'll do that. I'll definitely consider that.
I don't think there's benefit in just having a guinea pig property.
There's no benefit in that.
I really don't think the learning you're going to get is going to be super valuable learning. Not like if you want to know the numbers, the cost. Market. Yeah, exactly. Not paying rent in the middle. Like the numbers and cost involved. Like Ziv has those spreadsheets. He's got dozens of properties that he can say, oh, this is what they're making and this is what to expect. And these are costs. And he's got millions of stories about that. And also realistically is you will hand it over to a management company, right? And you'll pay them 5% management fee and 1 month leasing fee, and you'll actually be hands off. Okay. You know, I got a call for one of my properties. The air conditioner has stuffed up, but because it's on the third floor, they got to put scaffolding up. It's like paying 90,000 yen to repair this 7-year-old aircon. Maybe it's better just to replace it. It's still going to cost, it might cost a bit more, but I don't want to keep fixing a 7-year-old aircon.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So, but that's kind of it. Like they told me, and I just say, yep, replace it. That's fine. Take the money out of the rent, okay, the next month or two. And that's all in terms of tenancy. They send me a letter saying, or a message saying, look, the tenant is going to move out on this date. So we'll do an inspection on that date. And then we're going to re-advertise for people. Go, yep, great. Do it. Emil, then like, you know, after a few weeks, these are the two or three applications that we've got from this person. This person is, you know, they work at this company and this is their income. This is a family with kids, et cetera. And I'll say, what do you think? You've met them.
Right. Yeah.
Who do you think is a better applicant? Like who? And they'll advise because they're the rental department. It's at our agency. We have it. We have about 1,000 properties under management, but I actually outsource to them completely as a client. Like yeah. Even though I work in the same office, I don't do a single bit of management. I get the statements and the messages. I'm in the same client database that they've got. There's no direct thing with me. And because I don't want any headache with it and I don't want to deal with it. So that's...
It's the easiest way to do it that way. We did the same thing with our property. And the company, when you have a management company, they do everything for you. And all you do, you just get the letter, you get the paper every week, every month from them with the statement, and you get your money and you don't have to worry about anything. So
as a property manager myself, I would say that's my clients. They mostly are out of the country. Yeah, I mean, it's for short-term rental property management, exactly the same. I just give them a statement once a month. This is what we did. This is how much we spent. This is your profit. And there it is in your bank account. Thank you very much. Thanks for doing business. So that's it.
And for us working with people like Tracy, if they don't provide that every month, we'll replace them with another one. There are plenty to go around.
Oh, that's cool.
What Emil was saying. This is what management should amount to. It should amount to you reviewing a monthly report and being alerted to anything that should be alerted to. And that's it.
Absolutely. To be honest, if I wanted to buy an investment property in Tokyo, I would not be looking into long-term rental. I would be looking to buy something Tracy can run for me and manage it in long-term, in short-term rental, because you get a better income from that.
The problem is his budget, though. With 14 million, it's got to be a condo.
The budget and everything. You have to account for that, and whether that building would allow that or not, but. Definitely better income.
Mm-hmm. They wouldn't, but if the but that takes you also into another consideration is when you're buying a property that you might want to use for short-term rentals, whether it's minpaku or monthly rentals or whatever the case may be, the property selection criteria is a bit different. You're no longer okay with very suburban properties because people who rent by the month or by the week, they need to be a lot closer to center. The building cannot be as old as some of the long-term tenants would put up with.
Yeah. There's a lot to look at, but like for me, if I wanted another investment property, I would probably look more into that, especially if I was looking to cash in a little bit more.
Absolutely. Us as well. But don't forget, Blanca, that we've already got the safe and stable long-term residential lease investment property.
You know,
we can then play with the short-term.
You shouldn't be on rent. And this is just my very personal.
No, please. I need this.
You shouldn't be paying for rent to somebody, and then putting your money into properties that you may or may not get money out of and stuff. You know, kind of. I'm a believer in having a roof over your head first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
So, get the legs to stand on first and then go absolutely. I agree with that.
You never know what can happen.
Right.
So you need to know, you have to make sure you have a roof over your head.
Okay. So focus on that first.
You know, focus on having, even if it's small, me and my husband, we started from a small three-bedroom apartment. We bought an older mansion. We renovated it. And then, when we had some kind of a stand, then we bought a house.
All right. Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area. So Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's ARK Reform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
All right.
And then we moved the proper, kind of increased the portfolio from there. But even if you start from a smaller apartment for yourself, you have a roof over your head. You don't have to worry about anything. You can budget whatever income you have and budget with that. And then with the help of Emil or, somebody like Emil, you'll get a lawyer.
No, definitely me.
Of course you.
No, but she's right.
He's not like me. Same for us.
I'm going to be sharing all this information and then he hires somebody else.
Oh, of course, of course.
It happens.
We don't, we personally haven't been taking out loans to date, us as a family, I mean, but we also had savings and cash that we could use to buy either an investment property or a place to live. Okay. And the only times we've rented was if we weren't sure where exactly we want to buy and we want to experience the area first. So we'd rent for a few months or up to a year.
Okay.
But not beyond that. Beyond that is just throwing money away. If you've got the cash to put towards a home loan or a property, I would definitely get your own self sorted out first.
I took a long time to buy my place because I just didn't think, I was too busy working, paying rent, thinking that I was, as a self-employed person, I wasn't eligible for a home loan. And it wasn't until push came to shove that I actually went and started investigating. And yeah, it was. The finance was more accessible than I thought it was going to be. So that was a surprise to me. I probably rented maybe 5 years longer than I should have. So
because it's a common misconception that you cannot get employed as self-employed or as
the only exception would be like if your funds can actually generate a higher income that you'll be paying for in rent. Then it might make sense to rent something smaller and spend your money on something that generates more than that amount. But it's rare to find a deal like that. And it's rare that you'll want to live in a place that's small and miserable. So I wouldn't.
The loans in Japan are so cheap that I recommend everybody to get a loan.
Really? Are they that? I remember Zib talking about the interest rates are pretty non-existent. Wow.
It's below 1%, right?
That's Emil's forte, but yeah, they're very low.
Very low. Yeah, it's 5.8.
So so if you have like a Japanese wife, you'll be 0.65%.
Wow.
Is your, which is it's a zero negligible,
yeah.
Right?
0.65%, yeah, negligible. Yeah, basically, your 85% of your mortgage repayment is principal.
Okay.
And 15% is interest. So generally, like there's three, I think this conversation, we had three parts, right? Buying your own home, I think is definitely the first in terms of wealth management. Mm-hmm. Buying your own home is the first good step before buying an investment because you are kind of become your own tenants. The rent you're paying is the same as the rent, is now becoming your own, going to paying off the principal. But the benefit is that you have great financing and interest is almost zero.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, hey, Max. interest is almost zero. So you're getting a great deal. Okay. An investment property, someone else is paying the rent, but either it's not leveraged, right? So it's 100% your money, or it's leveraged, but you put 20% down. And your interest rate is maybe 2% to 3% for an investment loan. Okay. So all of a sudden you can get a property. If you think of buying your own place, is you've got 100% financing, almost no money down at 7 times what your annual income is. So significantly more than what you can get for an investment property, but the interest rate is much lower.
Okay.
All right. So it's a better deal than an investment property. And also you're your own tenants, right? You're going to need a place to live. So you can be confident that you're going to be paying the rent and you're going to be taking care of the property, right?
Right.
And there are other tax incentives to owning your own property. And also when you resell it, the tax breaks you get on capital gains, for example. Then the next step is, buying an investment property, I feel, with leverage is a good option. Because that just makes your money go further. And Japan is quite a stable in terms of property prices and rental, I feel is quite stable. Okay. And then cash only purchases are also good, right? Mm-hmm. And that depends a lot on your personal needs. So that's in terms of how I view property purchasing in Japan. Okay. We go back to your question about you becoming an agent. So one of it is the property purchase is relevant to sort of anyone, right, who's interested in real estate or living in Japan, okay? But now in terms of your consideration, what you need to become a proficient agent, in Tokyo or in Japan anywhere, is I feel a big one is you need to go out. Like most of the work that you're going to do is you're going to meet clients. So basically how to find clients. If you work with an agency, a lot of times that they will provide you the client, the inquiries, the leads, and you need to follow up and do the viewings and whatnot with them. Or now with the way social media is, you can also generate your own lead.
Okay.
There we go. So you can generate your own lead, but basically meeting people, getting leads, and then seeing what they're interested in and finding properties, arranging to take them to viewings and showing them. You need to know Japanese to a proficient enough level that you can engage with the seller side. Okay, call the seller's agent, check if the property is available, schedule a viewing, send a fax with your information because we need the fax, and to discuss with them, you know, all that sort of stuff, and then basic negotiation about, okay, is a seller flexible on price? What are you willing to do? When's a timeline? We want to make an offer, etc. In my case, I deal with the banks directly, so I call the Japanese banks, the loan officers, and schedule things and arrange all the paperwork. Again, this is pretty, because it's a finite world, although it feels like complex language, it's going to be the same language all the time.
Gotcha.
So once you have basic conversation language, to learn some of the key words and expressions you need to use for financing and real estate is not going to be sort of too extreme. Okay. And you don't have to worry about keigo. To be honest, one of the benefits about being a foreigner in Japan is the Japanese don't have, as long as you can communicate, if you make a bit of a faux pas in terms of your keigo and respectful language, honorific language, you won't get shut down. If a Japanese person doesn't speak in keigo, another Japanese will think, what the hell is this person rude?
I was scolded by an accountant on email once because I forgot to add san to his name. So there are exceptions, mm-hmm. but generally speaking, yes, they do give you the leeway
because you're. And are you still using that accountant?
No, it was close to having a relationship, which never happened after that. Yeah.
You're going to tell me off. So I think you just need to have that kind of skill set to be able to, in terms of language, be able to communicate with the Japanese part of the deal, of the transaction. And also within your own office, chances are there'll be some Japanese staff that don't have great English and will, want to do a bit of Japanese and English discussion back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You need to have decent proficiency in Japanese, but you don't need to be level one. Like that's not the deal breaker for you because most of the work and most of the sales will be in English.
Okay.
But then being able to understand clients' requirements and being good at finding properties, which means having a good understanding of the lay of the land. And then as you go out and view properties, you'll understand what works, what looks good, what doesn't work. And that's kind of experience that you'll get.
Okay.
And I feel that's, in terms of being a good agent, that's the skill set you need. Not, I have licensed this, I have Japanese, the N1 level, and that's not, I don't think you need to stress about that.
There's a ton of
ways that you can work in and around the real estate industry without actually being a real estate agent as well. There's a ton of, we're just an example of the breadth of what's out there. So finding what really lights you up as well, rather than sort of just saying, oh, I'm going to be a real estate agent. Well, figure out what it is that about real estate that you really like, and you can really pursue that. You don't have to follow anyone else's path. And I think that's our privilege as foreigners. We can do that. Don't feel like you have to lock yourself into any particular path. And just get here, boots on the ground, and have fun.
That's okay. Very true. You'll notice that everyone, each and every one of us here on this call, and most of us have been at it for a good few years, we all ended up in exactly the niche that we enjoy operating in. And I think that's the reason why we've got this longevity and actually are making it, is because we're not just going generic. We're owning the niche and we're happy with it.
Because there's a ton of, I mean, and you know, obviously there's the people that you see here, but you know, I know other people who work in other parts of real estate, you know, there's student accommodations, there's you know, homestay,
land development,
engineering. There's a ton of things that are out there. And that you don't really have to sort of box yourself in. Yeah.
And before you come here, a lot of things might change. You might change.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's great to plan what you want to do in 8 years, but you don't know how you're going to feel in a year or 2 years or in 5 years' time. So.
Oh, they're moving here soon, he said. No, Gar.
Huh?
I'm sorry.
You said you're moving here soon, right?
Yeah. So we're headed back there June of 2025.
Yes. So I'll be. Oh, 25. Okay, no, the blank is right. Who knows what will happen by then?
Yeah, but I'm only going to be...
Don't limit yourself, you know. Limit yourself because things might change. You don't know how you're going to feel about that. So just keep your options and your eyes open.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, I know people who work here and they work in construction. They work in, like, carpentry. They work as handymen. They work, you know, my husband as... started up a new job as a house remover. So there's a whole bunch of different stuff that you just don't know until you get here. So it's amazing.
That brings me to a different question. Garth, if you're only coming here in 2025, is your money making you money until then? What are you, where
good
is your
question,
money sitting?
Good question, Ziv. Yes, good question, Ziv.
That is a good question. So not necessarily. I think I know there's an option, and hopefully this is the path you're going down. I know there's an option to invest in properties from an overseas location. I know that's an option, but I didn't want
to
get
to invest in Japan. Yeah, you can. That's most of our customers. That's definitely doable. Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't want to get my, I guess I didn't want to get my hands dirty until I was actually there permanently. Cause I'm kind of like going back to what Blanca said. Like I had this tunnel vision towards Japan, but like going back to what she was mentioning, maybe I should just keep my eyes open too and have my peripheral vision open. I didn't want to make any serious moves until I was there within the next couple of years. So I didn't.
No, but I mean, at least lock it away in something that's gaining a little bit of interest for, if you're not going to be getting your hands dirty for the next two and a half years, just make sure that it's not just sitting there losing value. Yep. That's what I mean.
Yeah, don't keep it in the bank. You know, like whether it's in Japan or whether it's where you are, or whether it's, you know, with a different financial product, make sure your money is working for you now.
Okay. Yeah, I have a couple of investments, but it's nothing like substantial, like properties or anything. It's like, you know, stock market stuff and IRAs.
If they're doing well, why don't you put more?
Yeah, that's what I've got. I've got those two. You know.
Because that's liquid. I mean, you can take it out just before you move, right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. I'll definitely. And then, what's up in the middle? I see you smiling. In the middle.
Yeah, I think like so. The flip card is like it's historic low Japanese yen, right? I can't speculate, but you know, converting and I get lots of inquiries from Americans now trying to buy.
Your dollars are buying a lot more yen at the moment. Yes,
it's a 25% discount over the past 12 months.
Yeah.
So what was, what would buy you like a 10 million property was, you know, $100,000. Now you can get the same property for $80,000 US.
Wow. Well, that's the reason has 14 million to invest now. It's not going to be 14 million potentially. I mean, we don't know, but it might not be 14 million in a year or two.
Yeah, exactly. And so because it's historically low, it's like, will it still be this high in 3 years' time when you come? The other thing to keep in mind as well is in the real estate business is, okay, you have a wife and a child?
Yeah, I have two kids. My son, he's 9, and my daughter is 7.
Two kids? How old are you? Jesus, you look like you're 21.
Oh, no. I'm 35.
I thought that as well.
Yeah. No shit. Okay.
Yeah, 35. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Uses lotion.
Geez, someone's got jeans on him. Jesus.
How old are the kids? How old are the kids?
My son is 9 and my daughter's 7. Yeah.
So, same as mine.
I, just, I just want to go back to Japan so bad. Like, I miss
so many people think that way. Yeah.
I get it. Like, I never left.
Oh, I came. But Emil, sorry, Emil makes a good. We'll also need to start wrapping up soon. But Emil makes a good point that if you are going to be investing the funds that you've accrued over time in something, even if it's temporary, somehow tying it into the yen is not a bad idea, whether it's property or anything else. So there's a bit of an argument there for not sitting on your hands until you actually move here.
Okay. Yeah, so now that we're running out of time, I guess my last question is, and this is pretty much for everyone, like, what is something that you've learned in your experience within these past couple of years has really, I guess, really assisted you in the real estate industry? Like, maybe it was some sort of skill that you learned recently, or like an advantage that you picked up dealing with a client, or something that a mistake you made previously that, man, if I could go back, I wish I could correct. Was there anything in your recent years that you've learned? We can start off with Ziv.
With me, I think, I don't know if it's any particular thing. Like, I made a couple of silly mistakes when I just started out, not so many over the years since then. Mm-hmm. But I think if there's anything I've learned over time, and that's maybe more related to general business than real estate specifically, but it definitely applies to real estate, is to, it's kind of counterintuitive, but on the one hand, to broaden my horizons, to look at stuff that I haven't thought about when I started out. So when we started out, we were all about super cheap, super old, super high yield investment properties of up to $50,000. And we've done that for like 2-3 years. And that's all that we did and all that we recommended to our clients. And opening up to other types of real estate investments has helped me a lot. To diversify and to find people who will partner with me that are not interested in one thing, but are interested in another thing. So keeping, you know, all options open and just keeping myself open to new ideas. And on the other hand, also narrowing down the things that I say yes to, just in the sense that it over time, you can kind of sniff out mistakes that you made in the past and deals that are too good to be true. And people that talk in a way that, you know, kind of lets you get clued on to the fact that you might not want to work with them. So if it makes sense, like, keep your ears and eyes a lot more open than you'd think. Like, for example, you mentioned Tokyo, this kind of deal, this kind of budget. Let's just keep your options open. Don't laser focus on one thing. And the other thing will just come with time. I think you'll learn what to say no to a lot quicker.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
I was going to piggyback on that and say what I've learned, and definitely through the pandemic, is to really just mix it up in terms of who you hang out with, who you speak with, like the education that you do. So, you know, before the pandemic, I was like all short-term rental all the time. That's all I did. That's all I focused on. And I was very kind of siloed, very, you know, just focusing on my business. And I just thought that was the way I was doing it was the only way possible. And then the pandemic hit, and it forced me to look outside of Japan to connect with other people who were doing the same sort of things around the world. And I've learned so much on systems and processes, software, a whole bunch of, you know, and hospitality standards and a whole bunch of things that I thought I knew, and actually now I know better. So that was really it. And, you know, just diversifying who you hang out with as well. Like, you know, we're all in real estate, but we're all in different parts of real estate. So I've really gained a lot from hanging out with the people you see on the screen here. So it's been fun. Mm.
Awesome.
I would say for me, I honestly wish that, you know, those 10, 15 years ago that we did not look so much into Tokyo at that point.
Because we're all saying the same thing, you know? Like,
you know what?
Look at all options, yeah.
We bought our Matsudo apartment, the first one we bought in 2006. And at this point, I really wish we bought more, or we even went to Saitama in some parts, because at that point, they were literally giving land for free. Just, you know, if you bought it, and then all of a sudden, you know, IKEA, when the Costco, all these things grew in those areas, and the land and the property, or like Otakanomori right now, is the fastest growing area in Kanto, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the land cost zero nothing 10 years ago. So that's why we are telling you really do not just focus on one place. If you do, I really wish we put more more investments into the rural areas at that point, because right now all those rural areas are starting to boom and grow. And those people that they bought some properties or they had properties there at that time, right now they can get really good return on their investment. So for me, it's really kind of looking for opportunities that are a little bit further than it's just what is right in for your eyes.
Awesome. Okay.
That's
okay.
Definitely like, just don't focus on Tokyo boy or, you know, I believe that in Yokohama, you will find areas that are very good, reasonable right now, or Kawasaki, you will find places that are good, but they have potentials, you know, so, but honestly,
we pounce when we see a deal coming out of Kawasaki. We pounce like there's no tomorrow. There's not many of them.
I still believe that Saitama has a good potential, but that's just me, maybe. Mm. I think Saitama has a good potential to go and, you know, grow more because there are things going there. So, you know, look into those things. But right now, if you are not there, I think the best advice the guys gave you is tie your money to yen right now. So you can actually get something out of it. Don't sit on it and think that you will get the same thing out of it in 5 years. You won't. Mm. This is the time.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. Emil, you got anything?
I do. In terms of the real estate, the agent side, it's very important to focus on having the client's best interest in mind always. And that's always the pretty thing to say, but you notice it's
true. No, but that already that puts you at the 1% of the professionals working in real estate. Yeah.
When I work with agents that don't do that, like they just care about their commissions and maximizing their commissions, it's painful because they do it at the cost of their client. So, you know, sometimes when we have if I have two properties I want to sell, because agents' commissions are based on the value of the property. So in terms of commission, I'll get more for selling an 80 million yen property than a 60 million yen property, right? The commission is just higher. But a lot of times, I'll gladly say no to a property. Like, I'll gladly say what I dislike about a property to a client. Because if I think it's a concern point for them, that where they raise their family, it's like I don't want them just to buy any property, especially if that they may not be happy in.
Yeah.
Right. I'd rather let them know, and then they can make the decision. But I try to be as clear and transparent as possible about my opinions about certain properties. That way, when they find the property they like, even if it is a cheaper one, right, not the more expensive one, that they're happy and they're happy with my service. Because actually, a lot of my work, I make more from the referrals and the word of mouth and the confidence that everyone has about saying, oh, yeah, Emil's actually, you know, use Emil, please use him. Like, I get a lot of that. And because working with foreigners is a bit of a niche, the community is small. So being the honest person who has the client's best interest in mind actually goes a long way. And so net long-term over many years, you're going to get more value, like in financially more value, plus also it feels right by being honest and having your client's best interest, best mind at heart, rather than the short-term monetary goal. I think you'd do that anyway, but sometimes it's hard because there are two properties and the client likes both. There's maybe a 10 or 20 million difference in price. Just the numbers make you feel like, you kind of want to edge them on to be this one. And you need to kind of refrain and go, no, you know, like I shouldn't allow the commissions to cloud your judgment. And it's significant, right? It's, you know, 500,000 yen, 600,000 yen difference in commission. So that's, I think that's very important. Always do it, because in the long term, you being clear and stepping back from that, letting them decide, not being pushy, because the clients can sense you're pushy,
And there's a chance that the clients may still decide on the more expensive one.
Yeah, just
so all you've done is been pushy, and so it's not in the best interest. It doesn't make you feel good at the end of the day as well. So that's my thing. Always have the client, like genuine client's best interest at heart.
I think it's we've all given you bits of advice that don't really have that much to do with real estate, but they definitely all apply. Yeah, I think
this was perfect. This is exactly what I needed. It was a serious wake up call that it's very, very sobering that I need to finally kind of shift my focus from just jumping into investments to kind of taking a step back and being like, all right, what's the landscape? Maybe focusing on getting your house first, and then maybe you can transition later on down the line to investments. So I really appreciated this. Thank you so much. Like, it's so cool seeing you guys in person in real life, like seeing you guys on YouTube. Like, I'm like always having my notebook on YouTube and I'm like listening in. Yeah.
I like your style.
Your
enthusiasm, man.
I'll send you this video as well, like the raw cut of this video. So before it goes up on YouTube. So
It'll take a few months, but so yeah, we'll get there.
Awesome. Yeah, but that's all I had. I don't want to take too much of your time. And please have
a great fantastic.
Day.
It was great having you, man. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
I'll look forward to
seeing you guys later.
See you all soon.
See you guys. Bye.
Wow, that was a really good session. I really enjoyed that one. Hope you did as well. I love how we've managed to discuss such a wide gamut of topics, generally focused around real estate in Japan, but also going beyond that. So pretty awesome nuggets of advice there from our panel members, I thought. Awesome stuff. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.